Hello everyone, and welcome back to this week's The Flashlight Readers Club. We're going to continue reading The Talented Clementine. This one is from chapter 7 and on. So we actually finished the book in the live session, so we are going to finish the book today, which is really exciting. So we're starting from chapter 7. I showed Margaret my new sneakers at the bus stop Friday morning. "Oh yeah," she said. She fake yawned. "I had a pair like that when I was a kid. Not green, though. Green is the dumbest color." "That, Margaret." When I got on the bus, I hid my feet under my backpack and looked out the window for the whole ride. There are 94 street lamps between the bus stop and the school. In my classroom, a surprise was waiting. We had a substitute, Miss Radio. I called her that because she always says radio. Also, okay, fine, I can never remember her name. It was a good surprise for two reasons. First, because when she read my teacher's instructions, she said, "I'm sorry, but we're not going to be able to have a run-through of the last acts for the talent show. It will be a miracle if I can figure out what the heck we're supposed to be doing for classwork." The second reason was that seeing Miss Radio in front of the room gave me the most astounding idea of my entire life. I raised my hand. "Yes," Miss Radio said. "I need to go to the principal's office," I told her. "Radio," Miss Radio said. Substitutes don't ask you why about things. I walked down the hall, which was very hard because my new sneakers wanted to run, and I knocked on Miss Rice's door. "I have new sneakers," I told Miss Rice. "I see that," she said. "Do you have a note?" "Nope. I just came to tell you that tomorrow I'll be sending in a substitute."
"A substitute?"
"Right, a substitute. Like my teacher sent a substitute today."
"I'm sorry, but there are no substitute students."
"But why not? If a teacher can have a substitute, how come a kid can't have a substitute kid?" Miss Rice looked at me for a long time. "Do you know, Clementine, no one has ever asked that question before, and it's a good question, an excellent question. I'm sorry that the answer is still no, but I'm going to need a little bit more time to come up with an excellent reason for you."
"Oh, so am I all done being here?" I asked. "You're all done being here," Miss Rice answered, "for now."
After school, I brought my old sneakers with the new tappy bottoms up to Margaret's apartment. "All right, I'll teach you a very easy routine," Margaret said. "But remember, you have to do everything I say. You're 8 and I'm 9, so that means I'm the boss of you." Which is a rule I don't like very much. "What about Mitchell?" I asked. "He's older than you. Is he the boss of you?"
"Mitchell is Mitchell," Margaret said. "He can't be the boss of anybody."
"Well, what about my parents then? I guess they're the boss of all of us."
"Nope," Margaret said. "My mom is way older than your parents. She's the boss, so you have to do what I say."
Sometimes that Margaret makes me so mad. I tried one more thing.
"Oh yeah? What about Miss Jacoby on the top floor? She's 100, and I don't think that's older than your mother, so that makes her the boss."
Margaret looked stumped for a minute. "I don't know," she admitted. "It's too hard to tell with grown-ups." Then she brightened up. "So we'll just stick to me being the boss of you." I thought about the talent show and about me being the only one without any talents. "Okay, fine," I said, "for today." Margaret put on her tap shoes and I put on my sneakers with the bottle caps. She rolled up her rug and started tapping around. "This is called Shuffle Off to Buffalo," she said. "I'm extremely wonderful about it. Just do what I do." Except she did 4 million things at once. Head high, spin tight, arms floating, big smile. Margaret said, "Flap, flap, step, step, ball, shuffle, change." Her feet were moving so fast, I couldn't even see them. But I went over to the floor to try it anyways. Let me tell you, a shiny wooden floor is very slippery when you have 24 bottle caps glued to your sneakers. I took one step onto it and skidded right into Margaret's dresser table. Perfume bottles, hair clips, brushes, rings, ribbons, everything went flying through the air. Margaret made a face that said, "Clementine, you are hopeless," which I already knew. But then while she was picking everything up, she surprised me. "I guess you're not meant for tap dancing," she said, "but we still have time. I'll keep trying to think up something that you could not be so hopeless at." I think Margaret might be a little empathetic too. "Thanks for the lesson anyway," I told her. I changed back into my new sneakers and went outside to where my dad was finishing up the ivy. Maybe he'd noticed some great new talent today. But before I could tell him the bad news that his daughter was a failure at tap dancing, my brother came outside with my mom. He ran over to us and tried to pick up my dad's clippers. Dad said. "Sorry, bud. Not for little guys." Cabbage screwed up his face like we were in for a real whale.
So I stuck some ivy into my sleeves and down my neck and waved my arms at him. I was staggering around, crying, "Help! Help! I swallowed some ivy seeds!" This made him laugh so hard, he forgot all about the wailing. "Now that," my dad cried, "see? There's another talent you have, Clementine. Nobody else in the world can make your brother laugh like that." "Dad," I reminded him, "that's not something people perform on a stage." And then I remembered Joe. "Hey, Mom," I said, "could Beats still have an accident?" "First of all, your brother's name isn't Beats. And second of all, what do you mean an accident? I mean, he doesn't ever need diapers anymore, right? Even if he heard a really loud sound like clapping, he'd be okay. He wouldn't..." "Oh, no, he's pretty safe there." "Clementine, you ask the most interesting questions." Then she dragged my brother off for his playgroup while he was still laughing about the ivy. I thought about the other part. My teacher probably wouldn't make me put a leash on my brother, but I wasn't so sure about Margaret's teacher. Margaret's teacher really liked rules. "Do we have a leash?" I asked my dad. "A leash? Of course not. Why do you want one?" "Do you know anybody who does? I just need to borrow one for a little while." "Well, actually, I've seen a leash in Miss Jacoby's storage compartment from when she had that Dalmatian. You could ask her. My dad knows everything about everybody in the building. And he's always saying it's a good thing he can keep a secret. But, Clementine, I don't think Moisturizer would like that." "Dad, I know that. I would never put a leash on a cat." Chapter 8. At breakfast Saturday, I reminded my parents about the talent show. "You're going to be there, right? It's at 6:00. You're going to be there, right?" "Of course we'll be there," my mom said. "We're going out to dinner tonight, but that's much later. You know, we haven't seen your tap dancing routine yet. Do you want to practice it for us now?" "Oh, I'm not doing that anymore," I told my parents. "I've got something better. Something I'm more talented at." My parents asked me what it was, but I told them it was a surprise. "You're going to love it, though," I promised them. Then I brought Bean Sprout into my room to practice. "Once upon a time, there was a guy named Elvis," I started. "His job was to sing and dance around until girls fell on the floor, grabbing their hearts and wishing to marry him. Then I pretended to play a guitar and sang the first line of the Hound Dog song. And that was it. Squash went all historical, laughing so hard, I thought he might spit up his Cheerios. We first found out how funny my brother thinks this is about a year ago. I had seen this Elvis guy on an old TV show with my parents one night. The next day, I did the act for Spinach, and he cracked up. I didn't know what the second line of the song was, but it didn't matter because whatever I sang next, cracking at the top, yogurt in the shoes, whatever it was, made him laugh even harder. Now my parents call my Elvis act the old standby. Whenever my brother's in a bad mood, they call me in to perform. Because it only works if I do it. If my parents try, he just stares at them as if he's trying to remember who they are. Once Margaret tried, and he ran into his room and hid under his bed. I had to drag him up by his feet. "Hound dog," I sang again. "Doobie doobie, curtain." Carrot flopped onto my bed. He was laughing so hard, tears squirted out of his eyes. Then I got the leash. "Sorry, Margaret's teacher might make you wear it," I told him. "But don't worry, it's not for your neck." I buckled the leash around his overall straps in the back and waited to see what he thought. He got up on his hands and knees. "Arf, I'm a dog." "No, you're not a dog," I told him. "Grr, I'm a dog." And then I saw what a wonderful idea that was. "Okay, fine, you're a dog. Just remember that tonight you're a dog who thinks Elvis is funny." We practiced with the leash on for a while, and that went great. Then, while Potato had his nap, I practiced saying, "My act is called Elvis and the Laughing Dog," and that went great too. Just before 4:00, I reminded my dad that I needed a ride to rehearsal. "Oh, and Onion needs to come too." "First of all, your brother's name isn't Onion, and second of all, why does he need to come?" So I had to tell my dad about my act. "But don't tell Mom yet, okay? It's going to be a great surprise for her." "No, I'm definitely not going to tell your mom, but we're also definitely not bringing your brother to that rehearsal. And he's definitely not going up on that stage on a leash." "But he loves it. He thinks he's a dog." "Trust me on this. It's out of the question, sport." "But, no buts. Now get in the car. It's almost 4. Then I made a big mistake. I got into the car. I was thinking so hard about how this was the unluckiest day of my life that I forgot to think about how much unluckier it could get if I went to a rehearsal. When I walked into the auditorium, I saw Margaret's teacher and Miss Rice sitting at the side of the stage on tall director's chairs. tried to hide, but Margaret's teacher saw me. She looked down at her clipboard and frowned. Then she yelled so loud, all the kids in the auditorium stopped what they were doing to listen. "Clementine, I don't seem to have you listed here." "No matter, we'll fit you in. What's your act?" I went over there and whispered in her ear that I didn't have one. I hoped the kids watching thought I was saying I couldn't choose because I had too many talents. "What do you mean you don't have one?" Margaret's teacher yelled, even though I was right there. Okay, fine, maybe she didn't yell it, but all the kids were listening so hard that they heard anyways. "Hey, Clementine," one of the fourth graders called out, "your face looks like it's burning up. Maybe that could be your act." About a million kids laughed, even though it was N-O-T, not funny. Because he was right. When I get embarrassed, my face gets red and hot, so I didn't yell anything back to him. I just stood there with my red, hot face hanging down. Miss Rice called me over. "Come sit beside me, Clementine," she said. "You can keep me company during the rehearsal." So I had to sit in between Miss Rice and Margaret's teacher, right there at the side of the stage where all the kids could see me and know that I had no talents. The first act was called A Dozen Doozy Cartwheelers. 12 kids lined up, 6 on each side of the stage. "Wait!" I yelled. I ran into the gym and dragged a tumbling mat back into the auditorium. I placed it on the floor in front of the stage. Then I got some of the dozen doozies to help me. Pretty soon, we had all the mats piled up. Margaret's teacher was glaring at me, tapping her watch. "They're going over," I explained. No matter how they start off aiming, they're going over. And they did. At least half a dozen of the doozies went flying off the stage and right onto those mats. As soon as we got those kids back up and checked them for broken bones, I saw something else with my amazing corner eyes. "Stop!" I yelled. Then I ran over and grabbed a handful of saltines from one of the third graders just before they went into his mouth. "You're up next," I reminded him. "And you're whistling Yankee Doodle Dandy. No crackers." When I got back, Margaret's teacher gave me a look that said she was going to remember all of this nonsense when I got into her grade. But Miss Rice gave me a thumbs up. "Thank you, Clementine," she said. "Those crackers could have been a problem." And you will not believe what happened next. Margaret's teacher apologized. "I'm sorry," she said. "I'm a little antsy tonight." I wanted to stick around to hear about why she was antsy, but just then I noticed that the super duper hula hoopers had been hula hooping for a while. I went over and asked them how long they were planning to go. The girl on the right said, "I once went for 5 hours and 13 minutes. The girl on the left made a face that said, "That's nothing." "Well, you need to have an ending tonight," I said. "There are a lot of acts after you." I borrowed the Jump Roper's CD player and explained how they could hula hoop to the music and then STOP stop when it was over. And I didn't even get to sit down again for the rest of the afternoon because everybody needed my help or something. Finally, after everyone had a chance to practice their acts, I went over to Miss Rice. "May I go into your office and use the phone? I need to call my parents and tell them not to come." "I think it's a little late for that," Miss Rice showed me her watch and then called out, "Take your places, people. 5 minutes to showtime." Everybody ran to their places. I ran to the curtains and peeked out. Every seat in the audience was filled. Margaret's teacher clapped her hands for attention. "Before we get started," she said, "I just want to thank you all for being part of the show. Each and every one of you is helping to raise money for the big school trip next spring. Except Clementine." Okay, fine, she didn't actually say except Clementine, but you could see everyone was thinking it. Just then, the secretary came over and handed her a note. Oh my goodness, she cried. She jumped out of her seat faster than I thought a grown-up should. Oh my goodness gracious, it's now! My daughter's having her baby, my first grandchild. Go, said Miss Rice, it's all right, we can handle the show. Just go be with your daughter. Oh, thank you, Margaret's teacher said. And then she left so fast, she really did lose one of her bobby pins. It didn't look like lightning, though. It just looked like a bobby pin falling to the floor. Wow, I said to Miss Rice, so now you have to run the whole show by yourself? No, not by myself, Miss Rice said. I have an assistant, and that's you. Me? Oh no, I can't. You can, and I'm certainly not doing this alone. I really can't. I don't pay attention, remember? You do pay attention, Clementine. Not always to the lesson in the classroom, but you notice more about what's going on than anyone I know, and that's exactly what I need tonight. I don't think this is a very good idea at all. Well, I do think it's a good idea, and I'll prove it to you. Principal Rice called over one of the hula hoopers. Hillary, what's the second act after intermission? Hillary looked around. I don't have a program, she said. Do you want me to get you one? Miss Rice told her no thanks. Then she turned to me. Clementine, what's the second act after intermission? Caleb from the fourth grade is going to burp the Star Spangled Banner, I told her. Does he need any props? a 2-liter bottle of root beer. How long will it take? 41 seconds. 48 if he has to stop to drink extra soda at the raucous red glare part. I rest my case, Principal Rice said. She pointed a no-buts finger at the empty director's chair. When a principal orders you to do something, it is impossible to refuse. Some part of you always gives in, so I climbed into the chair. Open the curtains, Principal Rice said, and the worried scribbling feeling exploded all through my body. Chapter 9. Well, you would think those kids had never had a rehearsal. First thing, all dozen doozies cartwheeled off the edge of the stage, except for one girl who forgot to move at all. Maria and Morris Boris Norris from my class went on stage, and they cartwheeled right off the stage too. Nobody had to go to the emergency room, though, and the audience thought the whole thing was supposed to happen that way, so it was okay. The next act was the O'Malley twins. Lily had convinced Willie not to do the whole thing with his lunch, and to play a duet on the piano with her instead. But when Lily got up to the mic and announced the act, she got so nervous, she threw up. I looked at Willie, sitting on the piano bench. Willie does everything Lily does, and sure enough, he was getting ready. Not on the piano, I yelled just in time. Then I ran over and closed the curtains quick so that the whole audience wouldn't get started too. When the janitor came running out to clean everything, I had a good idea. Send Sydney out now, in front of the curtains, I told Miss Rice. Why? She asked. There's no microphone out there. That's okay. Sydney's really loud, and she's going to recite a poem, so there's no cartwheeling, just standing still. Besides, she's got really skinny feet, so she can fit out there if she stands sideways. So, Sydney went on stage and stood sideways and yelled her poem. By the time she was done, the stage was all mopped clean. Next came the hula hoopers, and they completely forgot about what I told them about stopping. The music ended, but they just kept on going. Finally, I had to close the curtains to pull them off the stage so that the jump ropers could go on. The jump ropers must have figured that if the hula hoopers didn't have to stop at the end, neither did they. So I had to close the curtains on them, too. Then came Margaret. She did fine at the walking on stage on time thing, which not everybody did. But just as she got to the microphone, Alan took a picture of her from the audience, which was a bad mistake. Whenever anyone takes a picture of Margaret that she isn't expecting, she freezes. She says it's the horror of not knowing if she looks perfect or not, which I don't understand because Margaret always looks perfect. No matter. There she was, frozen on the stage with her mouth hanging open. For one tiny second, a little part of me thought, good, no showing off for you tonight. But then my empathetic part took over. I ran over to where Margaret could see me and I waved at her till I got her eyes to unfreeze. I pointed to my hair and pretended to brush it. Margaret nodded like a robot. She turned to the audience. First, always brush your hair, even if it's cut off like mine. She looked back at me. I pretended to do up some buttons, and I pointed to my right. Always make sure you're buttoned up right, Margaret told the audience. Then I lifted my foot and crossed my fingers over my sneaker. Never wear green sneakers, Margaret said. Green sneakers are the worst. Then she shook herself as if she'd been asleep. Then she went up closer to the mic. Wait a minute, she said. I was just kidding about that one. You can wear any color sneakers you want, and green is the most fashionable of all. She zoomed me a smile so huge that all her teeth bracelets sparkled like diamonds in the spotlight. I zoomed her one back, except with no teeth bracelets, because I don't have them yet. After that, Margaret was okay. I went back and climbed into the director's chair, and Principal Rice gave me a huge smile. She leaned over and said, I have the answer for you now, Clementine, about why you can't have a substitute. It's because there's no substitute for you. You are one of a kind. And that's when I realized I didn't have the worried feeling anymore. Instead, I had the proud feeling, like the sun was rising inside my chest. The proud sun rising feeling stayed with me all through the rest of the show, and no matter what went wrong, which was plenty, Miss Rice and I fixed it. Finally, we got to the last act, which was Joe and Buddy. Joe blew one note into his harmonica, and Buddy started howling. The audience went wild for them and kept calling for more, which was good because Buddy kept howling as if he had been waiting for this his whole life. I felt a little jealous thinking about how great Spinach would have been up there with that fancy leash and how much the audience would have loved my act too, especially my parents. Now that the last act was over, I guess they were out there in the audience going, hey, wait a minute, where's our daughter? Miss Rice and I closed the curtains and herded all the kids back onto the stage where we had practiced. Then she'd open the curtains again, everybody took their bows, and only a few kids cracked their heads together. Miss Rice and I stepped back into the wings and climbed up onto our chairs to watch. The audience kept smiling and clapping. The kids kept smiling and bowing, and I was mostly happy, even though part of me was a little bit sad. Someday, I'd like to know what it feels like to have people clapping for me, too. "We did it," I said to Principal Rice. "It's over, and we did it." "Yes, indeed, we did," said Principal Rice. "But it's not quite over. I have one more thing to do." Then she got off her chair and went on stage to join the crowd of kids. I heard her take the microphone. "Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to Talent Palooza, Night of the Stars. And now, I would like to introduce the person who made it all possible, our very talented director. Without her, we would have no show here tonight. So Margaret's teacher had come back. It was good news babies could be born so fast, in case I ever decided to have one, which I will not." Miss Rice came over and put her hand on the side curtain. I jumped off the director's chair to make room for Margaret's teacher, even though I still didn't see her. "Ladies and gentlemen," Miss Rice said, "please give a big round of applause for," she pulled open the curtain, "Clementine." I was so surprised, I just stood there staring. All the third and fourth graders were staring back at me with thank you eyes and big smiles. Then they started clapping, regular at first, but then harder and harder. Pretty soon they were clapping so hard, I was afraid some of the skinnier ones would break their wrists. Then the audience started clapping like crazy too, and it seemed they were never going to stop. The sound grew so loud, it practically peeled the ears right off my head. But I didn't care, because now I know what it felt like to have people clapping for me. G-O-O-D, good. Chapter 10. On the way home, my mother kept shaking her head from being so astounded. "I can't believe you kept all that a secret. You were so amazing." My dad caught my eye in the mirror and winked. "She's even more amazing than you know," he told my mother. "Yep, we have a very talented daughter here. Sport, we are so proud of you." Then he looked over at my mom and raised his eyebrows. She nodded and smiled. "Are you tired, Clementine? Or do you think you could stay up a little later than usual?" "I'm not tired," I said. "Do you need me to spy on the sitter, make sure she doesn't smoke cigars, or order things from the shopping channel? Do you think she's making phone calls to Australia?" "I might be a private detective when I grow up." "No," said my dad. "The sitter's fine. We were wondering if you wanted to come to dinner with us at the Ritz instead." "Really?" I asked. "What about the peanuts?" "Usually, when my parents go out, it's my job to make sure the babysitter doesn't bring any peanuts and leave them around. Broccoli is allergic, and if he even has one tiny peanut, he might go to the hospital with his neck all blown up or something." "We'll talk to the sitter," my dad said. "I don't know," I said. My brother had never been left with a sitter without me to save his life. "It'll be all right, Clementine," my mother said. "We can trust the sitter to remember. We'd really like you to come. After all, we wouldn't even be going if it weren't for you." So I said, okay. And we went home, and my parents got more dressed up. I didn't because I already looked so great. My mom put on her new shoes, and I thought my dad was going to hurt his head from smacking it and saying, "Wow." When the babysitter came, my parents told her about the peanuts. And then I told her and told her and told her too. Then my dad looked at his watch and said, "We have reservations." So we said goodbye. But when we got to the lobby, I couldn't leave. "Wait here." I hurried back to our apartment and got one of my mom's permanent markers and wrote on my brother's forehead, "No peanuts for me," in big blue capital letters. Then I felt all right. On the way to the restaurant, my parents asked me what I wanted for dinner. They always do this so I don't have to look at the menu and have the not choosing problem. "A hamburger and mashed potatoes," I said. "I'm on it," my dad said. And he was. My parents ordered food that I had never heard of. Then the waiter said, "And for the young lady," which was me. My dad ordered some more food that I had never heard of, but when it came, it was a hamburger and mashed potatoes. "Excuse me," I said very politely, "may I also order some crackers?" The waiter shook his head. "Sadly, there are no Ritz crackers at the Ritz. It's one of the deepest mysteries of the universe." I didn't want him to feel embarrassed about that, so I told him I still liked his restaurant. "And I think you're a really good waiter, too. Very empathetic." Which he was, because all night long he figured out everything I was going to want, and I never had to go up to the counter to ask for anything more, even ketchup. For instance, exactly when we were all done with our meal, and I was wondering about dessert, he magically appeared. "I recommend 3 desserts tonight," he said. The Boston cream pie, the creme brulee, and the velvet chocolate cake are all especially good. I could see my parents thinking, oh no, here comes the choosing thing. But while the waiter was describing the desserts to us, his pencil drifted down to my menu and tapped one of the desserts just for an instant. I looked up and he winked. I'll have the velvet chocolate cake, I said. My parents made a I don't believe it face at each other. Then they ordered the other two desserts. My dad's was creme brulee, which was French for vanilla custard that's been blasted on the top with a blowtorch. And I'm not even kidding about that. My mother's was the Boston cream pie, which came decorated with clementine slices. The clementine, said the waiter, is the sweetest fruit, is it not? My mother laughed and nodded at me. I've always thought so. She took one bite of her dessert and said, I just can't do it. I'm too full. My dad took one bite of his dessert and he said, me too. I'm stuffed. Then they both pushed their plates over to me, since I was at the Ritz No Crackers restaurant with three desserts. I think this is the luckiest day of my life, I told my parents. Then my mother whispered, take off your sneakers. So I did. And then secretly under the table, she took off her purple dragonfly, not very sensible wow shoes, and slid them over to me. And for the rest of the meal, I wore them, which nobody knew because I kept them under the tablecloth, even when the waiter came over to bring me more whipped cream. Okay, fine. When the waiter came over to bring me more whipped cream, it is possible one of the dragonflies was peeking out. The end. So that's the end of the Talented Clementine book. We finished it in this week's live Flashlight Readers Club, and we're excited to start a new book next week. If you guys want to join us, you can find the Zoom link or you can continue watching it here on the St. Mark's United Church website. We'll see you guys next week.